Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everybody. Today on the podcast, we are just in time to have a conversation with Kate Cummins, occupational therapist based up in Yarrawonga, a more rural part of northern Victoria, who is the founding director of the Play Project. Why are we just in time, Kate, to get this conversation done?
Yeah, Kathy, I'm 36 weeks pregnant, so I'm a bit nervous. My last one came at 37, so we'll see. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
Oh, well, we are lucky, lucky, lucky. I've wanted to kind of capture your story for a little while now. Maybe describe what the business looks like right now, and then we'll kind of have some fun reminiscing about how it got there.
Yeah, absolutely. We are a very busy little business at the minute. It seems to have happened quite quickly, although I've been working for myself for a long time now. But there are about 15 therapists working with us now, mostly based out of our Yarrawonga offices. And we're providing predominantly program sort of based OT services, quite a few assessments as well, to children in sort of an intensive format. So we've got some weekend retreats and some school holiday programs and family camps and things that we run for children through the NDIS predominantly.
Yeah. And what's your role at the moment in making all of that good stuff happen?
Well, with your
Kate.
Yeah, that's right. Very much trying to transition out of being so hands-on. I guess when I first started working in private practice about 10 years ago, loved working with the kids and loved being there, supporting the parents, and then over time just started to find that face-to-face stuff particularly sort of draining, and I got a lot more joy from developing the programs and creating, I guess, some more innovative ways to try and support families to achieve outcomes. And so that has sort of been my focus area for the last few years, and then getting a team around me to help assist me with the day-to-day therapy side of things. So I'm certainly moving more into that director CEO sort of role, especially now I'm forced to do that with this third baby coming along. But yeah, hopefully in the new year that will certainly be more my role, overseeing things.
So somewhat gone are the days in your business where kids come in for one-to-one therapy for 40 weeks. What drove the shift from that?
Yeah, we were very much forced to do that. So I started dabbling in private practice about 10 years ago, and that was when the Helping Children with Autism and Better Start funding was around, and there just wasn't hardly any pediatric therapists in our area. And so the demand for services very quickly outgrew my capacity. And then as I started having children myself and my capacity dwindled even more, we really had to look at other ways to meet the needs of these families. A lot of them live a long way from the services, so accessing services was tricky. Getting into schools became a lot more tricky, and I was getting a lot more frustrated that I wasn't able to achieve the outcomes that I wanted with the families by sometimes going into schools to do that traditional model. We didn't have a clinic, so we were going into parents' homes, which was great and worked really well a lot of the time, but it meant a lot of travelling for me as well, so it really limited the amount of kids that I could see. And we also have a really low socioeconomic group of families, and so having the capacity for some of our families to follow through with some of things just made it a little bit frustrating as well. And so we wanted to go back to basics and to work on some of the foundation skills for kids around sleeping and eating and good routines and that sort of thing. And so that's how our intensive programs came about originally, and how we could support families to make their life easier for them. So looking at doing those in school holidays, and initially they started out as sort of half an hour every day for 5 days, and then they grew to coming for the whole day, and then they grew to the family coming for the whole day but also coming to stay overnight with us on some of our school holiday programs as well. And we've just seen, I've seen so much more satisfaction in the outcomes that we can get for the families with that approach.
Camps, this is not for the faint-hearted.
No.
How many other adjectives I could put in there, but this is a G-rated show.
I've got plenty of stories I could tell about some of our experiences in our early days with our camps. We started off very small with very small numbers of kids and lots of staff, and the staff bring their children along as well, which gives that really nice mix to our groups. And that's been a really important differentiating part, I suppose, for our camps, is that we've got that really nice mix of kids with, say, autism or intellectual disabilities, some of their siblings, and then some of our staff kids as well. So we've got really great role modelling happening in a lot of our groups, and it makes it much easier for our leaders to facilitate those groups as well.
In the past, you've gone away with how many people up into the mountains?
Yeah, so we head up to Harrietville for our school holiday camps, and we've been up there about 8 or so times now. We started off with about 6 families the first time we went up, and our most recent camp there was about 150 of us, so about 100 or so kids and about 50 staff.
So all I can think of is what can go wrong, but I have a few clues about that. What were the outcomes? We won't even go down that place. What were the outcomes that you saw with the kids and families over those few days?
Yeah, so the first day, and I always warn our team that the first day can be really tricky because the kids are generally coming from being at home for a while in school holidays, and so a lot of them are coming with not having had much structure, maybe spending a lot of time on technology, maybe having their sleep routines and things all a bit out of whack. And we deliberately structure the program so that we're outside in nature the whole time. Thankfully, we've been blessed with the weather most times, but rain, hail or shine, we get outside, and we also go up there and do some activities in the snow as well. But having them outside, we're providing sort of really simple real foods as well, so there's no preservatives, there's no additives and things in the food, so that allows us then to work with the families on supporting the kids to find foods that they'll like to eat, getting them huffing and puffing and moving their bodies throughout the day, and being out in nature keeps their bodies much calmer, so we find they go to bed much happily and more easily at a more appropriate time. And so then by the third or fourth day, the parents are noticing a significant shift in behaviour, that their kids are feeling much calmer, that they're much more settled, that they're happier. And that then gives parents the confidence to be able to take some of those strategies home and use them at home.
And some of the families come back camp after camp after camp, don't they?
Yeah.
For this reason, I suspect.
That's been fantastic to watch, and I guess it's reassuring to us to know that maybe we're doing something that's helpful for them, because that's really the purpose, is we wanted families to not feel like they were having, that it was another chore to come to therapy. We wanted to make sure that they were coming and feeling like they were getting a break too. And so during the day, while the kids are with us, the parents are off, they can be doing some education programs, some self-care programs themselves, or having some time out as well, and a bit of that respite time, I guess. So that, I think, has been enormous for most parents, because they struggle to find somewhere where they can go on holidays or where they can go away with their families that's safe for their kids and where that they feel like they can get a break. And we've been really blessed with the space that we use up there, that it's really well suited to these families as well.
Yeah. So people listening are probably just incredulous that you have taken this on. How did you kind of get your fear out of the way to give this a go? Just the right amount of fear. You still need some, because it's a useful thing, but
Fear is probably something I've been tackling since my teenage years myself, and I'm very much one to face my fears and sort of work through it, and especially if I'm motivated by something and I can see the value in it, then I'll sort of look for the opportunities and the solutions rather than focus too much on the problems. My husband's a secondary school teacher, and he's ran a lot of school camps, and I've been very selective with the staff that I use as well to make sure that that I've got sort of really good people around me to make that transition easier. And like I said, we just started out slow with a select sort of handful of families, and then as we repeated the process over time, we just learned what worked and what didn't, and gradually built it up to something that has become sort of quite successful and quite popular. But we certainly had a few big learning curves along the way.
Mm. I can only imagine the number of spreadsheets and documents that are involved. Just in a really general kind of comment, how has it kind of impacted and driven essentially your business?
Yeah, well, initially in the early days of the business, how I guess some of it came about to begin with, and I think a lot of people probably relate to this story, I had always just dabbled in private practice and just did a couple of days a week and had my secure sort of hospital job there. And then after I had our second baby, I went on maternity leave with a plan to not go back to the hospital and to start out on my own. And in my first intensive, it was just a daytime one, and it was I'd done a trial over the summer holidays and it worked really well, and so I had planned to do another one in the April holidays. And on day two of the program, my 9-month-old got an infected finger, and we ended up spending a week at the Royal Children's, and it sort of threw everything into chaos. And so at the time I was like, gosh, if I'm going to go down this road of having my own business, I've got to play this a bit smarter. And so that's when I started hiring, and I first started out with another OT who could help me out if something were to happen to me, that she could then sort of jump in and assist. And then the best thing I ever did, which was really scary because I felt so nervous about having to be responsible for someone else's wage and their livelihood, but I hired an admin support, and from there I would say, compared to most businesses, our admin support side of our business is really big, and that's because there's so much involved in getting the OH&S side and the legal side right for our school holiday programs, but at the same time that is sort of the crux of our business as well. We certainly do assessments, and we do a little bit of one-on-one therapy, but certainly our intensives and our other programs are where the focus is, and so we are pretty top heavy from an admin point of view.
Yeah. So COVID would have made camps pretty difficult. What's this year created for you?
You were there back in April when I just found out that I was having a baby and dealing with flipping our whole business on our head, and what went from cancelling one camp in April went to then cancelling another one in June and cancelling another one in September. Mm. And that was a really stressful time, because so much of our income does come from those, and so much of our planning does come from those programs. But at the same time, we had another little project on the side that we had started working on, a little farm out about half an hour from where our clinic is, where we wanted to run those programs that we were running up in the hills. We wanted to run them on weekends, and we wanted to run them for young adults during the week as well. And so COVID gave us the opportunity, I guess, to get that off the ground. At the start, again, starting off small with the restrictions and things, we're sort of just working with one or two children at a time, and probably our most vulnerable children. But again, that allowed us to iron out some of our processes and build up. And so these last few weeks, now that restrictions have lifted in Victoria, we've had about 30 kids every Saturday out doing our Saturday social program out at our farm. And of those 30 kids, about 10 stay for the weekend, and we work on all of those sort of independent living skills and routines and things that we would do at our bigger camps, but just in a more intensive sort of one-to-one sort of supportive model, which has been really good.
The farm is glorious. Just settle back and just describe the farm to us, mud and echidnas and all.
Yes, well, with the farm, I'd been looking for something like that for a good few years. It's been amazing going up to Harrietville, but it's a good couple of hours to head up. Being in the high country, it can be quite cold in the wintertime as well. So we wanted something closer to home, and we wanted something that backed onto a natural setting. So it needed to back onto the forest. We wanted to make sure we had water available to us, and obviously needed to be affordable too. So we found a beautiful 30 acres right on the Murray River State Forest between two wineries in the Rutherglen wine region.
Just perfect.
It's where I think most of us as clinicians would love to hang out for downtime, as opposed to bring the kids out there. But it's certainly a beautiful place to work. We've got lots of sort of rolling hills, which make for a great play space. We get down in the forest and we build huts down there, and we cut down old bits of timber and make fires and do lots of cooking and campfire cooking and things. Like you said, we get in and play in the mud, and we've been able to build a beautiful veggie garden out there and get some chooks. And so it's been a great space for especially our kids that that struggle to do any mainstream after school activities. So some of our non-verbal kids, our kids that just that are generally sort of confined to home because of safety issues in the community, they've been able to come out to the farm, to have that safe place, to be able to explore, and just beautiful to see how much settled and calmer they are when they're out in nature.
And I think I could say the same for the grown-ups as well. I know how much joy you get when you're out there. If I ever need to find you, I'd know where to go.
Yeah, absolutely. The staff love it. And we've been so blessed with that, the staff that just keep coming back. I think we had 30 kids out there on the weekend and about 17 staff. So it's we're so lucky to have a space that people love to work out of as well.
Yeah. My next question was going to be about the team, because this is sort of a OT role on steroids, isn't it? It's not for everyone, but it is just so core to participation and choice and control and being in it. How do your team kind of roll their sleeves up on this sort of work?
That's what I love about our team, is that everyone just gets in and helps. And so with our team, we were really light on for OTs for a while there. And so the OT role very much came in the support of upskilling and overseeing some of the other team members. So we would have some educators, some social workers, some speechies. We would also use a lot of allied health assistants. We're lucky our local secondary school runs a certificate 3 in allied health assistant, and so we sort of get the pick of the bunch there coming across, and we can train them up then over a series of years to get familiar with our programs, and they come back and work with us each weekend or each school holidays. And then the OT's role really is one, building the capacity of all of those team members and getting in and showing them how we do it. But at the same time, they've been amazing. Our therapists are just getting in and helping, whether it's one-on-one with the kids or with the communication back to the parents as well. So we've spoiled, I suppose, with the team of therapists, and a lot of them being mums themselves too, have just been so valuable for me in that process of building up that quality service.
Yeah. Gosh. Maybe just run us through, who's going to be at the Christmas party? Or I think you might have had it last week. You've got assistants, social workers, who else?
Yeah, so we've just had a huge number of new recruits join our team, which is amazing, and the camps have been the perfect learning opportunity for them as well. I find when you're starting out as a new grad, the more time that you can get sort of on the ground playing and interacting and working directly with the kids, the better your skill set gets at being able to learn how to communicate and be able to practice and reinforce the things that we're recommending to our parents or teachers or whoever else might be working with the kids. And so we're really fortunate to have three new OTs just join our team. We've also got a couple of early intervention staff that work out of our Bendigo office. So we've got an OT and a speechy that work out of there, and providing sort of a key worker model to families over that way. We've got specialist behaviour support now in our team. So we have two specialist behaviour support staff. We do some play therapy as well. So we've got a great social worker on the team to do that. And then we have about 5 or 6 admin staff now assisting with program development. We've got someone solely dedicated to finance now, and I've found that a steep learning curve with the NDIS. Our practice manager now is heavily involved in everything from incident reporting with the NDIS to reporting on the restrictive practices and those sort of things. So that that change, I guess, in the last 12 months from an admin point of view has been huge. Mm.
Yeah. The other change, I guess, is also you've got a team of 15 plus now, but 18 months ago, was it 5? 2 years ago, it was 5. So your leadership, while starting from a strong base because of previous work, has, you know, let's just kind of say vertical.
Yeah, very much. I was just sitting down this morning looking at our organisational chart again, and I just feel like I'm changing it all the time. It's just this constant work in progress. As we bring on someone and onboard them and sort of sort out our swim lanes in terms of what their roles are, and very quickly, oh, there's too much for that person. We need to look to bring on another one. And so that's something that I have had to get very comfortable with very quick. I think I remember chatting to you a couple of years ago, Kathy, and I really was just wanting to put my toe in and not to commit to anything because I had so much fear around what that would mean being responsible for so many people's livelihoods. And I've had to really do a lot of work on myself around overcoming that fear and setting that bigger vision for the business, even transitioning out of our home office into a clinic. We did that about 18 months ago and looking at maybe transitioning again now, and there was so much fear around that commitment to those sort of outgoing expenses that's probably been where the most growth has happened, is in me personally with investing in myself.
Yeah. So how would you kind of describe your leadership style right now?
Good question. I like to think that I am quite flexible in that I will work with each individual participant, find out what their style is, like what their each of my staff, I mean, how they learn best, what works for them, and sort of then adapt a little bit to how they learn best in order to get the best out of them. And I found those wealth dynamics profiles that you introduced me to be so valuable with that. And that's been a really good learning curve to make sure I'm matching people to where they work best. And so I think that I would say my team would say that I'm quite transparent as well, and pretty open with what I find difficult and where my vulnerabilities sit too, so that they're aware that it is okay to make mistakes. I can be at times quite a perfectionist internally, but looking at sort of, I've had to get much better at explaining the why behind things as well. And I think that that's made a big difference when they understand why I want things the way that I want them. And I've got better at communicating that. That probably wasn't a strength of mine, my communication skills. And I would have in the past had a tendency to just jump in and do it myself. But having another baby sort of forced me to get more.
Not always sustainable, that little one.
No, it wasn't at all. But it's probably been fantastic, I would say, the last few months to start to create some really clear roles for each team member and to work with them individually and to invest in them as well with support for each of them to be able to build their own confidence as well. I think that there was probably a fair bit of reliance on them there for a while, and so really been working through that the last few months to help them develop the confidence in their roles too.
Yeah. So you've mentioned kind of financials and that you've now got a dedicated accounts manager, finance type person. How have you pulled that learning? You've not just learned out how to do it, you've applied it and you're improving it all of the time. Where has that knowledge come from?
Yeah, I think I've got a huge amount out of working in the Accelerator boardroom with the other business owners that you've introduced me to, Kathy, and the support that you've provided. And I've worked really closely with my accountant along the way as well. So when we're planning a camp, there's a lot at stake, and especially if if there's a risk of having to cancel one as well. So we've learned a lot of things the hard way along the way. But certainly budgeting and planning, and I do a lot of number crunching, and the numbers all the way along, I suppose, have really been my best friend. And so all of my decisions are based on the numbers, and I spend a lot of time forecasting and planning for the programs, because I probably learned early on that a lot more time goes into programs than you think, and that you can very quickly not get a return on the time that you're investing in that. And obviously up front, if you're investing in the first program knowing you're going to be able to duplicate it, then it's fine. You can put a little bit more into that first one. But certainly that's been where the growth has happened for me, and I've struggled a little bit more with the expenses, because I tend to, if we need something or want something or something's going to be of value to the team or the client, then I don't hold back. And that's probably been something that I've had to have my accounts people and my accountant step in and protect me a little bit from myself. And just planning a little bit sort of tax wise and around, now that we've got so many people and paying out so many wages, that planning around all of those expenses that has required me to get a lot of help from my accounts team, and that's been so valuable to take that out of my hands, because it's not my strength, protecting myself from spending. It's not my strength.
But you need to know it, but you also need to know what you don't know, and to bring in great trusted advisors. And I think, your comment, the numbers are your friend, is absolutely spot on, because at the start of this year, sort of February, March, April, you had your numbers kind of screaming at you about what the bank account was going to look like for this year, and you had everything you kind of needed. You may not have had a solution straight away, but you had the forecast there to act on.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into that change in April with COVID, we had planned, obviously, I'd planned to pay upfront, sort of without borrowing for all of the $500,000 worth of work we planned to do at the farm. And then having to cancel those three camps caused a lot of stress financially. But at the same time, because we did have that framework there come June, when we knew that things weren't going to change quickly, I was able to start to prepare for December and January, knowing that December historically is a really quiet month for us. And so instead of sort of going into, I did go into panic mode for a little while, but
you did a bit. That's okay. It was exceptional year. You're welcome.
So for a while there, I was sort of thinking, I just can't accept this. I can't just sit there and watch this happen. I wanted to do something about it. And so for the first time, we introduced programs in Term 4. We hadn't done that before. And it's been a game changer for us, introducing programs for Term 4. So we had a Ready for School program and a cooking program. We had the social program on the Saturdays, and that's made the world of difference. So it's really nice now going into Christmas without that fear of cash flow over the summer.
Yeah, and because the farm was kind of done and ready and waiting, you were able to get people excited about coming back to the farm, or coming out to the farm and getting back into programs. So you just had that nice kind of end of Term 3 stuff to wind it all back out to something that is going to be, I guess, differently sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this beautiful little baby is about to arrive, literally about to arrive Earthside. How is this, and where the business is at, how's that going to kind of shape up next year for you? I haven't asked you this. I actually really want to hear the answer.
I'm actually really excited about it, because I think if there wasn't a line in the sand like this, then I would have a hard time separating. And so it's really forcing, it has, especially the last couple of months, forced me to get my ducks in a row a little bit, and to hand things over and to set up our systems. And so whilst it's been a crazy past 10 weeks sort of onboarding all these new staff and checking in and making sure that my leadership team sort of are feeling confident and supported, that I think is going to be so refreshing, because my time I know is best spent on the creative stuff. And I know once a baby comes that I will want to keep working, but being able to work in a more creative capacity excites me. So that's sort of how I'm feeling about next year at the moment. I've got really good support. As you know, Kathy, I outsource everything. so at home there's not a whole lot that I do. I don't do any washing. I don't do much cooking. I don't do a lot of things. So I'm pretty excited about next year and the things that I have outsourced already and the time that that might free up, not just for me to be present for my kids, but also to have that creative space.
Oh, I don't know whether to be nervous or excited. I'm excited about you getting into the creative space. Oh, gosh. So, you know, all kind of giggles aside about creative Kate getting off the leash here, what's your job going to be across, you know, March, April, May, when you perhaps find some shoes and head back to the office?
Yeah, so at this stage, the way that we've set it up is, and we'll see, I guess, time will tell how well it works, but each sort of person in the business now has their role and what they report to me, and I'm hoping that I can step more into that CEO role where I have my scheduled catch-ups each week with the team and they report to me, and then we've done a lot of work on planning out for a start, just planning out our term one so that everyone can hit the ground running, especially our new team members can hit the ground running with our programs and things for term one. And so I'm hoping that for me it is, and I know I'll have to hold myself back a little bit, but that I can stay at that higher sort of CEO level.
Yeah. Yep. Makes a difference. You can, hold some of the cards close to your chest as you answer this next one. But I know that you've done a lot of planning about the next 5 years and probably the next 10 and the next 15. What, I'm just going to throw it a little wider. What do you think allied health services are going to look like in the next 5 years?
Yeah, we've talked about this a bit in the past, Kathy. I'm really nervous with the NDIS and the changes that they could make that could impact our business so quickly. And I'm also really mindful. I believe the NDIS in its main is an economic sort of stimulus package for the world. And I think that a lot of the jobs are going to be in those entry-level positions, maybe in allied health assistants and support workers and some of those core support services. And so I'm nervous about how much funding will be around for capacity building and one-on-one therapy in particular in the future. And so that's something that I've been really mindful of right the way along and wanting to make sure that I know coming into the NDIS, we had income streams from so many different buckets, and now all of those buckets have combined into the NDIS. And so I wanted to sort of, from a risk point of view, diversify that. And that's where the behaviour support piece has sort of stepped in for us. I think that there's a huge amount of work that we can do in the future around trauma and supporting children with challenging behaviours and things. So I definitely want to explore that side of our business more and look at what we can do to support families in that space more. Certainly some of our online programs, we started to dabble in that a little bit this year like most people, and looking at how we support our young adults and our more regional and remote families as well, with some sort of skills development type programs and potentially some online programs there. And certainly, reducing or helping educate parents in other ways aside from that one-to-one therapy model. I think that there's just such a growing demand and there's so few therapists on the ground that for us in particular, we've really focused on how we can deliver services in a more smarter way as well. And I'm a big believer in not just exchanging that time for money at that $193 rate, because most business owners will know that when you're charging that rate and you're a registered provider, it very quickly disappears. And so whilst someone thinks they're making millions, I've found that...
Goodness for the 99 cents.
We need to, for us a big focus is how we can use our time smarter and create, whether it's some more evergreen things or where we can capitalise, I guess, on that, the work that we're doing, and retain that better so that we're not just exchanging that time for money over and over and over again.
Yeah, selling time. Kind of a good message there. Thank you, Kate, about future-proofing your business against the very stimulus that started it, that is still pretty volatile and somewhat unpredictable.
I don't like not having control, Kathy. And so when
I know your highest value is freedom.
Absolutely. So then when you hear about like these independent assessments and all of those things happening, I feel like we need to have a plan B and a plan C.
Always, 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 always. So throw it forward maybe 10 years. What do you reckon?
Oh, I have no idea. Look, I change all the time, and this again was probably one of the reasons I was so nervous about going all in originally with the play project and getting the business to the size that it is now, is because I know that I get bored easily and I change my mind quickly. But the one thing that's been consistent and that hasn't changed is that value of freedom and that desire to give families that experience as well, and to give them the opportunity to have more freedom and to live their best life as well. And so certainly on our radar is looking to do more of our farm and camp style program, but potentially in other locations as well. I'd love to be able to take our families to the beach and have those sort of experiences, and many of our kids from the country just would never have ever even been there.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting. Get out Google Maps. What would you really like to kind of share with allied health business owners?
I suppose for me, investing in myself has been my number one most important thing right the way along. When I started out in my career, I was a sort of 21-year-old, I never really gave any thought to that, and I didn't really actually even know what it was, and probably wasn't until I was about 28 that I started to understand the value of investing in myself. And even now, every week I invest very heavily in myself. And so I think that as a business owner, we're the first to give away all of our time to everyone else, and to not stop and take time to not just refuel our own tank, but to foster our own learning, and not necessarily like our clinical skills, but our actual our own ability to control our mind, or to manage our thinking, and to work through some of those fears and challenges that we have. And so that to me has been the best thing that I've done for myself over the last 7 years, and I think that has allowed not just the business but my whole lifestyle to grow to where it is today, and that's something that I can't recommend strongly enough to everyone else.
Seconding that one. Perfect segue. Are you happy to share where you're off to this afternoon?
I am, for sure. I'm very
I could just about join you.
I've been excited for weeks, but too nervous to get excited for fear that this baby might ruin it. But shouldn't say that, not ruin it.
No.
Interrupt it. No, I've got a weekend away with some of my school friends. Every year, at this time of year, we go away with friends. So heading away for 3 nights to Daylesford, and that's something that I've spoken to you about, Kathy. Every 12 weeks I try to head away, whether it be by myself, whether it be to a business event, or whether it be with this close group of friends. But to spend 3 nights just by myself recharging is heaven.
I think that's just the headline statement. I endeavour to do similar. It's been somewhat compromised this year, but a good long weekend every quarter, absolutely critical, and something I've been kind of banging on about for years. And in a proud mother moment, because I have a daughter who's an adult daughter, and she sort of said, oh, I'm off camping, and I just assumed she was off with her mates, but no, she went 3 or 4 days on her own to a remarkable place, and we were sort of just talking about it, and I said, well, what was the purpose? And you know, it was a reset. It was just getting sand between the toes, getting the salty air, getting the rhythm of hiking, just kind of clearing expectation. So yay, next gen, got it, girlfriend.
I love it. My husband is fully supportive of it now, because he's seen now over the years as I've done that. He's like, you come back a much better person. You're so much happier, and you've got so much more energy to give to him and to the kids and to everyone else. So he really, like, he can tell if it's been more than 12 weeks and I haven't been away. He's very encouraging me out the door.
Cape time. It's Cape time. It's Cape time. Thank you so much for sharing up your story. I am excited about the baby news. Hopefully not today or over the weekend, but just on the right sort of date. Well done you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for having me. I love listening to the podcast. So, yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
You are welcome. Now you're on it. Have a good one. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.